Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to the 32nd episode of the Pirate Rugby Pod. We are now past 900 YouTube subscribers, so thank you so much to everyone for tuning in and following us this far. You know the drill. If you like what we do, like, comment and subscribe. We always reply to everyone who leaves a comment, so get in amongst it. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter as well and subscribe to the Substack. The links for both are in the Linktree link in the description box below. If you subscribe to the Substack, you'll get an email every time we drop a new piece of content, including some new features that we've got coming this week, which I'm looking forward to share with you. More on that later. No Ender this week, you may have deduced by his dulcet Irish tones not being the ones introducing this podcast, but never fear, I'm joined by not one, but two exciting, dynamic personalities here to talk rugby with me. They are the host of the Cardiff Central podcast and well-known Welsh rugby personality, Dr. Harley Worthy, and the biggest known candle maker on Twitter, who is also into her rugby, Leslie, aka Missile Panda. Good evening, both.
Good evening.
How's things going? International weather check isn't going to be very interesting this week because we're all within about 200 miles of each other.
Dull and grey in sunny Fife, or not so sunny Fife.
I did see this weird yellow orb in the sky for about 5 minutes today. I don't know what it is. I don't like it. Can I have my grey and cloud back, please?
It was nice this morning here in the Midlands, and then that quickly changed. Anyway, let's waste no more time on that. So let's have our rugby moment of the week. I'm going to go first. So my rugby moment of the week comes in stages. So the Scarlets won a game. That was a moment. And the player who played the best for us in that game was Alex Craig. And I was looking at his stats after the game, and he said, according to Rugby Pass, that he beat 9 defenders. Now, for context, Doohan van der Merwe beat 8 defenders in the 1872 Cup a few weeks ago, and people were going mad about it, like it was the most exciting thing that ever happened. So I was like, a second row who plays for the Scarlets beating 9 defenders, that's a big deal. So I tweeted Opta Johnny, who is the Opta is the big stats company, and Opta Johnny is their rugby page. And I said, I've got this from this website that says he beat 9 defenders. That must be a record. And they quote tweeted me and said, that is the joint most defenders beaten by a second row for the URC since we've been taking stats, joint with Nakarawa, who, for people who don't know, Nakarawa is a Fijian second row, absolute legend of the game, offloading central things. So that was exciting. And then the Scarlets themselves quote tweeted Dr. Johnny, like, yay, this is great. And then Alex Craig himself quote tweeted that. So I am the pebble in the pond and the ripples are going everywhere. And I've started that and I've made Alex Craig's day, maybe. So I'm happy about that. So that's my moment. Leslie, what was your moment?
My moment of the week was Helen Nelson's kicking 100% from the tee this week. Given how poor, I think we'll say she was last to Six Nations, to 100% from the tee, this game was great. And they weren't not all of them were easy kicks either. So I think that is my nice moment of the week. Good to see.
Yeah, there was a nice one from the touchline, I remember, on the right touchline that was really impressive. You got one, Harley?
Well, I mean, I've got my moment of the week is my daughter's first birthday. and spending the time with that. So, you know, I've managed to keep a small human alive for a whole year, which, you know, I feel quite proud of myself for that.
It is impressive when you phrase it like that.
Yeah.
Of course, you keep humans alive every day at work, at the doctor surgery.
I'm not that kind of doctor. We keep going through this. I'm a biochemist. Anyway, but my rugby moment of the week comes from the same game as Leslie, and for me it's Cecilia Tuipulotu picking up where she left off, bounding over for a try, because whenever that young lady plays, it makes me happy.
She's a proper superstar. Like, people get probably excited every time that her name is mentioned. She is one of the biggest names in the Six Nations. It's amazing. Listeners' moments. We love hearing your listeners' moments of the week. Harry Jones, the famous poetic Harry Jones, he replied with a moment of the week, but it wasn't in words. It was a sketch of himself. And he may claim it's not actually himself, but it was a bald man with a beard who was fairly burly, shall we say, in a nice way. A man holding a Georgia flag fighting a dragon, which I think was a reference to Georgia calling out Wales. But that was his moment of the week. I think his moment of the week was the call out rather than the sketch itself. But with Harry, you know, there's always something bigger going on. So who knows? Who else did we have? We had our friend Maz from France. Bonsoir, Maz. Said that her moment of the week was the entire UBB versus Stade Toulouse match. An absolute thriller, a classic. We'll talk more about that later. And Cardiff Central Podcast, we don't know anything about them. Said that their moment of the week was Teddy Williams making 32 tackles away to Glasgow. An unbelievable effort. And then Scarlet's Fever said Edwin Swart scoring a try.
I wonder who posted that one.
Yeah, I don't know those guys. They follow me around. We
definitely didn't post them ourselves.
Okay, right. That's enough of that. So let's talk about some actual rugby that actually happened. Not much news to distract us this week, which I'm actually quite happy about. It means we can talk about the real things. So, Women's Six Nations kicked off this weekend. We've all enjoyed it. First, I just want to hear your general thoughts on the first weekend in total. Women's Six Nations, does it still feel like it's got the growth and the momentum behind it? Is the standard still growing year on year? Leslie, what did you make of it?
I think we had two very good games and one lot less good game. Standards definitely feel a little better. I thought Ireland particularly looked a lot better than it did last year.
Mm-hmm.
There definitely, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I've definitely not seen as much buzz and content around it that we did last year. It's been a lot quieter. I don't know what you guys have thought, but yeah, not a lot of content being created by creators, if you know what I mean. Not a lot of social media posting. You're getting the odd thing, but yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's because we've just had the men's and there's been no real break. We've not had a breathing space as such, it's just been straight in, but I don't know if we're all feeling a bit of fatigue. I don't know, but it definitely doesn't feel, there was no buzz or excitement that we got last year when we had a bit of a break between the men's and the women's. But still good games.
I agree with Leslie there. I think it has been, and when you think about it, you know, we had the World Cup with the BXV sort of sandwiched in. Then we're straight back in. Huge packed league because there's no autumn international break. You had Europe, you had your Six Nations. And now we're straight back into the Six Nations. It's almost like you haven't had time to catch your breath, you know. And, you know, some content creators like Squidge, you know, have been quite open about how, like, mentally exhausting it is just to try and focus on one block of a few weeks. I mean, as much as I love how the fact that the women's tournament is separate, I do feel it does need like a week or two gap in between. Because, you know, particularly if you follow like a club side as well, and you're excited that your club side's back, and then he's like, oh, hang on, Wales women are playing as well. And trying to watch all those games in one year, I was quite lucky being a Cardiff fan. My, you know, our game was on the Friday night. So then Saturday I could focus on watching the women's rugby. Yeah, I agree. It's not. It definitely didn't have the buzz. So not compared to last year, you know, when was it last year or the year before? I'm pretty sure it was last year when TikTok got announced as the big title sponsor, yeah. And there's a lot of hoo-ha. And whereas now it's like, oh, it's the same.
Yeah, like Leslie, we spoke about this last time you were on the pod about the content creation, and I still think that as a viewer, what as a watching experience, I think the women's Six Nations is presented and the content around it is a lot better than the men's. I think that
yeah.
I think the men's Six Nations is very much phoned in by the likes of the BBC, and you know everyone knows that I don't like ITV, and the online content is pretty much nothing. Like I found myself on TikTok watching tutorials of how to do the Dutch. Is it the Dutch plats? Is
yep.
that what they're called?
Yep. Great.
I need to learn.
yeah, and it's all the players who do it themselves, and like the women's players get social media a lot more. I don't know whether it's because they use it more than men do. I don't know, but
yeah, I saw quite a lot. So obviously, I'm on TikTok too, so I saw a lot of Scottish players on their own accounts doing stuff, and there was a little bit through the official Scottish, you know, rugby channel, but nothing like what we saw last year, which I thought was a wee bit disappointing, but we've not had the same build up because the men's didn't finish until, you know, last week, and then we've had 1 week. It's a lot to cram into a week, you know. Mm. Plus with URC, as Harley said, back and stuff, it's just the content that we've seen has been good. There's just not been enough of it.
Yeah, I thought particularly in the Wales-Scotland game with Lee McKenzie hosting and all the pundits they had. I messaged you about this, Leslie, the comms and the co-comms. I think was it Nick Heath who was doing the lead comms for the Ireland-France game, France-Ireland game?
Yeah.
I thought that was particularly good. I thought that was one of the best commentary and co-comms I've heard in a long time.
Jade Conkle as well. Yeah.
Properly talking about like, and they're targeting the 15 meter and they're really going for this and they're trying to do that and they hope to do this. And it's like, ah, we're talking about rugby like, rather than trying to make dad jokes.
It's better than the ref chat.
Oh my God. Yeah. So much.
Everything is better than ref chat, even if I do descend, hypocritically descend into it myself. Yes.
Same. And like I said, the show that was hosted by Lee McKenzie and things, it's just so, I'm going to come out and say it. It's because the people who are doing it on merit. They got their jobs on merit rather than their names, which is what you have in the men's game. So that's why I think it's so much better. But anyway, so that's kind of that side of it. I think for me, the big difference that I feel compared to last year is the kicking and the kicking from hand. I think it's better because I remember having conversations, maybe not last year, maybe the year before, with people about how it was still something like a big difference between the men's and the women's game was the kicking, and now that feels like that's changed, and it feels like the women are getting just as much distance on the kicks as the men's are now, and that's a big difference. And the goal kicking, like you said there, Leslie, the touchline conversions and things we weren't really seeing a few years ago that we are now. Do you think we're seeing the benefit of the Celtic challenge at all for the likes of the Irish, Scottish and Welsh? In your own time.
Yes and no. For fringe players, yes, it's probably been useful for Alex Stewart coming in to the Scotland team. But I don't. It's been valuable game time, but whether it's been beneficial, I don't know. I don't think so because a lot of those players, for Scotland anyway, our Prem players, and we only had a few per game, so it probably didn't make a huge difference, I don't think.
Hmm.
For me anyway, you may have other thoughts.
Yeah, I'm probably with Leslie on this. Again, the Wales team, it's sort of been, well, you know, it's mostly Premiership players, but what the Celtic Challenge did give is something for all the Worcester Warrior players who, you know, basically they went to New Zealand, came back and found they didn't have a job. Which, you know, I can't imagine how hard that would have been on them. I know, like, Sean O'Tarry's retired and, you know, this isn't playing anymore, but, you know, like, the likes of Alex Callender and Natalia John, it gave them somewhere so they can at least get some match fitness so they're not coming into this cold.
Alex Callender had a great game as well.
For Ireland, I think it's worked quite well because it's given them some cohesion. You know, I mean, they may have walked through the Celtic Challenge because, you know, it, for them, it was basically their whole squad, really, and then going through, but it at least gave them some momentum. So then, again, they're not starting cold.
Yeah, I think. To be fair, you know, I'd like, maybe you need to get an Irish guest on to talk about this more, but the IRFU were getting a lot of stick for the women's game this time last year. And obviously they didn't do very well in the Six Nations. Now, since the Wolfhounds dominated the Celtic Challenge, and yeah, they didn't get the result out in France, but everyone's saying like, wow, that, they're a lot better than they were. Maybe that is starting to turn, and obviously the Sevens programme is going a lot better as well, over in Ireland for the women, so that's interesting. Right, let's talk about the actual games then. So let's start off, because it all affects us here, with Wales versus Scotland, a historic win for Scotland. It feels like every Wales-Scotland game it finishes with a squeaky bum time. Like, it's always... And to be fair, I think, you know, and I hope I'm not being harsh on this, it felt like if Wales had got the draw at the end, that would have been a robbery of Scotland. I don't know. Leslie, you've got to be... The emotions for that game for you must have been delighted and also terrified.
Yeah, just, it was just deja vu from, you know, a few weeks ago. Yeah, I mean... It would be great if we did continually see Wales comebacks in Scotland games. That would be great. I thought our Scottish defence was very good for the whole game, pretty much. And looking at some of the stats that came out today and some of the tackles that Scotland players made, it kind of, you know, confirms what we kind of thought. I thought our attack looked really good when we got going. Really dangerous, you know, we've got Ronan Lloyd, Kareem Grant, Emma Orr, you know, any one of those is a threat at any time. And I thought they looked great. I thought Wales' backline didn't look, not say bad, but not as good as Scottish backs, I don't think. But you've got, you know, great forwards. You've got Cecilia Tuipulotu for a start, you've got Alex Callander. I thought your forwards looked pretty good. I thought Wales did look a little bit kind of sluggish at times, maybe. Just a bit. And I don't know if it's because you have a new 10 and it's a bit of a settling in period and, you know, nothing, it's not going to click necessarily overnight. But, yeah, I thought there was at times that it just... You know, passes being dropped, and there was a period, I can't remember who it was, I think it might be in the scrum half. She spent ages trying to look for someone to pass it to. It was just that cohesion just wasn't there of getting quick ball to get something going. But yeah, I think Scotland were probably the better team on the day. Probably deserved the win. Not that it always works out like that, but I thought we were the better team.
Yeah, I definitely agree that you were the better team. So Harley, the stat, and we Leslie spoke about the Scotland defence there for a second. Scotland missed five tackles all game. Like the whole team, five tackles. That's a credit to Scotland's defence, but what does that say about Wales' attack?
This is the problem. I mean, bear in mind that Ewan Cairn has built his team around the Gloucester heartbreak, you know, this unstoppable force. And you think, oh, well, you know, there's going to be loads of cohesion there. And you start looking at it, you're like, well, yes, but then you've got the Bristol scrum half with the Gloucester 10, and they've not really played much together. So actually, maybe you're losing a little bit of connection there. Nell Metcalf, although she has been playing for Gloucester Hartbury, a lot of her time has been with Gwalior Lightning. And you start breaking it down. Was it the fullback off? Names escape me because, again, as we spoke off air, names do not stick in my head. It's really irritating. Someone who talks a lot about different player names. But, you know, again, the certain key pieces haven't quite played together before. I think that's going to cause some problems. But, yeah, it's, you know, we know Wales have got a great pack. It's not often we can say this about Wales side, admittedly.
Yeah.
But it does feel like we haven't... I mean, it's something me and yourself, you have spoken a lot about off air in, you know, those conversations. There seems to be a problem in Wales rugby with about detail around attacks. We just don't seem to be able to do it at the moment. No matter whether it's men's, women's, age grade, you know, at URC level, senior level, it's just all very one-upperners and hope for moments of magic.
Scarlet's under-18s are the only good attacking Welsh side that I've watched this season. But yeah,
and all of them are going to be in the English Championship next year anyway.
Oh my God, yeah. They're going to be playing for Ampt Hill. Anyway, the point about like Cecilia Tupilotti, who's getting a lot of mentions on this pod, whenever we're within 5 metres of the Scotland line, I'm like, just give it to Cecilia. She will score the try. Like, bless the rest of you for being here, you know. Like, just pass it to the Ampt. I always pronounce the name wrong. Is it Pierce? Again, she's always great. She played the full 80 again. Like the two props, and this is again, it's not a very Welsh thing. The two props are the two class players. Just give them the ball and let them run at the Scottish line. But yeah, just the lack of detail. And you can forget sometimes that Jazz Joyce is playing, and she's one of the greatest Welsh players of all time, men's or women's. You know, she's a Mount Rushmore player.
I know it's like almost sacrilege to say in Welsh women's rugby circles, but I don't actually think she had that great a game. I don't think she's had as good a game as she has, but I don't know if that's just because she's not played a lot of 15. She's only been doing sevens, and I'm not sure how much. Unfortunately, I just haven't had time. There's too much
other things. Because she feels like she's been around forever.
I think it's a similar thing to like with the George North thing, when you're like, you're surprised that he's actually.
She's 28.
Yeah,
oh God.
She's been around forever. Like I think she broke onto the scene when she was like 18.
I assume she'd be like 35. Okay, well, oh well, it's good for the rest of us.
But other names like Georgia Evans, players like Georgia Evans were sat on the bench, and then they've got her to bring on this experience and impact. But is that enough? One thing. But then again, I said, Wales women don't really have too much of a problem with the pack until they get up to the top tier sides. It is that detail at the back. I remember with you, Les, I said after the game, and I said a similar thing off probably to Craig Manson, Scottish Rugby Pod. It would have been a robbery if we got that kick. But it was also an awful lot of pressure to put on Frankie George. Bear in mind, she doesn't kick goals for Gloucester. You know, normally for Wales we have Kira Bedden. So, you know, maybe we should look at another one. But, you know, at the same time, she stands up and nominates herself. Oh, we, if you're going to score tries, can you at least just go under the sticks? You know, be less selfish, try scorers.
I mean,
yeah.
To be fair, she wasn't far off, was she? I mean, it was
what
hit the poster.
No, it was his. It was a heartbreakingly like distance.
Yeah, and then we had the classic. If the clock's in the red, and I came up with a rhyme to this to the tune of That's Amore, I can't remember what it was. Anyway,
it's the Gareth Davis the Gareth Davis manoeuvre of kick the ball out.
Yeah, it's just like Ellis Bevan did the same thing for Cardiff on the Friday night. It's just but Mark made a good point on the Scarlet squad. Mark made a good point in Scarlet Squad is that the entire team was set up for the kick. So it's not just her fault. Like, no one said to her, no way, don't kick it.
They made a caterpillar rock and everything, didn't they?
Yeah. Oh, that reminds me.
I don't know if that was a miss hit, though, and they went for, like, the hit and hope, you know, to try and, like, make it contestable and just shank the kick.
Yeah. Oh, if the ball is kicked as and the clock's in the red, that's a Welsh come out. That's how the rhyme went. That's reminded me though, Leslie, one player I just want you to talk about who I know that you're a big fan of, who felt like she was in complete control throughout the whole game, is Rachel Malcolm. Like, she was completely unfazed the whole time. One of the best captains Scotland has ever produced?
Yes, 100%. I think she's, outside of women's rugby, probably not recognised for her. How good she is, a leader of that team. The way she speaks to the team, the way she speaks after matches, she's so eloquent. You know, her heart's on her sleeve as well. You know, she'll happily, you don't get the corporate, you know, sanitised answer. She's usually very honest in how she's feeling after a game. And I don't know if you saw our post-match interview, just how happy and delighted she looked. Especially, you know, with 7 wins in a row with the team I've had now. And compared to last Six Nations at the beginning where we'd lost a couple of games and, you know, she was, you know, it was so many losses in a row. She was gutted at the time. To now see her leading this team, they've got some good vibes going. Yeah, she's great. I think the men's team could learn a lot from the way Rachel is on the park, the way she speaks to refs. She's very much in the, I guess, maybe like a Sam Warburton kind of mold. She doesn't really speak to the ref much, but when she does, you know, it's something that's really quite important to her, and refs tend to then take notice. She's great. I'm a Rachel Malcolm fan, definitely.
Cool. Awesome. Okay, let's move on to the next game then. Well, the game that preceded this, but it's the next game in Podcast Magic World, is the Ireland, well, France versus Ireland game. Again, we spoke about Ireland's looking a lot better than we thought. I'm struggling to get a read on France at the moment. They beat New Zealand in New Zealand during the WXV, but it still feels like they're a step behind England, who we'll come on to in a bit. Harley, do you have a kind of a view on France at the moment? I will say that some of their athletes that they've got in their back line are very intimidating.
I mean, you can almost cut and paste a lot of stuff like we'd say about the France men's team, because it is just a lot of athletes, a lot of very skillful people of both backs and forwards, with a lot of physicality. Pauline Bourdon-Sansus says she's taken her wonderful partner and, you know, the original Antoine Dupont before Antoine Dupont did. She had a typical game. I do feel they looked a bit clunky and slow. I don't know if it's just because they've not really had any preparation for it, or, you know, some teams, Wales are notorious for just being very slow at start tournaments. But I don't want to take away from Ireland. You know, there was such a huge step up from anything we saw last year. I don't know if it's because they've got their sevens players back. But I feel like that really only, you know, that's more of a backs thing. But, you know, there was an uptick in their physicality. I thought the defence looked a lot better. You know, the mind.
Fight after contact.
Yeah, there was a lot of, there was a better vibe. But, as quantitative and scientific as that is, it just all felt a lot better. Arguably in spite of what the union still, the IRFU are still trying to pull on them. You know, I hear a lot of Irish female podcasters and pundits and saying, you know, this is still not great. It still feels second class. It's, you know, the way they're trying to do professional contracts is really crappy and underhanded, and not necessarily allowing the best Irish players to follow the dreams of being pro, when the actual contract itself is a joke and basically unlivable. You know, pretty much any part of Ireland, never mind in the capital of Dublin, which is an incredibly expensive place to live, I'm told. Yeah. It was exciting. Those team, you know, I think it's two, three tries they scored. It was in the back number two, but, you know, they only scored 3 last Six Nations in total. And that looks...
I did not know that.
You know, wow. So I believe that's a stat. Probably if that is incorrect, but I'm fairly certain it was only 3 tries. And, you know, I think they got, you know, and it was, you know, and they've brought that margin against France down significantly. I think they only scored 3 points last time, and it was well into the 50s.
Yeah, I messaged a couple of people during the game saying, this feels like a very different team. Leslie, do you think the scoreline was fair or harsh? It was 38-17 at full time. Oh, so it might have been 3 tries, sorry. Two tries, 1 penalty. Was it a fair reflection of the game?
I think it was. I think Ireland did have their sevens players back, but I don't think they made much of a difference. I was really excited to see Baben Parsons back, and I don't think she got into the game all that much. She had a couple of carries, but from what we know that she can do in sevens and in 15s, she just didn't manage to get any kind of impact on the game. So I actually was a nerd and made some notes as I was watching the game.
I could see you reading.
Yeah, because I will forget everything about the game. So I had a special mention for Linda Zhugang, and you know, she was just absolutely everywhere. You know, she'd be tackling somebody 1 minute, and then the next minute she's, you know, having a carry, and just didn't stop. Her work rate was phenomenal that game. She's some athlete, and yeah, she was brilliant. A couple of other standouts, I thought, Aoife Wafer, played in Celtic Challenge, was great for the Wolfhounds. I think it was the Wolfhounds. She got a try as well. So there's still issues, obviously, but their new coach seems to be making some difference. You know, it's only his first game in charge, but I thought there was at least some positive signs. And it is a very good French team. Yeah. France's line out was absolutely dreadful. I don't know, like just absolutely awful. I don't know the stats because I haven't checked, but I would guess they didn't get many.
It says 88% according to Robbie Bass, but line out stats, if you like knock it backwards your own way and then your scrum half then drops it, that still counts as a line out one. So it's a bit funny. It's a bit like scrum stats. Like you haven't lost the scrum if you get concede a penalty on your not your butting. Like the stats are a bit
different. Yeah. But yeah, they were pretty poor. France's line out. Their mole was good. They've got some good forwards. Their number four, whose name totally escapes me, was really good. I think she got the player of the match. Hopefully somebody will remember her name. I'm really sorry.
Mane Feleu.
Yeah, what was it?
Probably pronounced that horribly. Maz will be on to me telling me I'm a stupid idiot.
I was going to say, your partner will tell you you're an idiot, won't she? She speaks French.
Well, that's a controversial subject, actually, but that's for a story for another day. Okay, so that's that game. Leslie, I'll stick with you. So I'm gonna tee up a mean question that you can bat away. Is the Six Nations a foregone conclusion over here? Because England is so good compared to everybody else.
Yes, I think it is. No one is at the level of England yet, unfortunately. We saw them beat Italy with 13 players on the park quite easily. There wasn't really much competition, if you like, from Italy. I can't see anything other than an England slam, unfortunately. But that's just where we are in women's rugby at the moment. Yeah. Everyone else is playing catch-up.
You could just take the view that we're witnessing history view and we just have to kind of respect it and enjoy it.
Yeah, it's going to be like this for probably a couple of years at least. You know, it's going to be 3-4 years till everybody else has the same level of investment that England have put into their women's team and league. No one's there yet. Mm.
Harley, what do Wales fans have to look forward to next week going to England?
I think for a lot of us at the moment, we're all basically where Italy was about 10-12 years ago in the men's. In the men's situation is, it's wins are probably not going to happen unless you're France. France probably have other wins who close to have a chance. For the rest of us, I think, is about closing this gap. You know, so last year we were very competitive for 35, 40 minutes, and then basically the legs were taken out of us. So now a good game for us might be making it for 60 minutes. We're probably still going to concede a bonus point win, but we've got to get closer and closer. And I do think as well for Wales, though, I do think they need to start stepping up and showing improvement. They've got these solid foundations, but as teams like Georgia found out, having a solid foundation in your forward and set piece isn't enough to beat the best teams. You need to have that four-rounder game. So that's where we've got to start seeing more cohesion. It's something I'm very fed up of saying, because I've basically been saying it for the Cardiff podcast from Vrap about Cardiff and Wales men. It's very performance-based. You know, we've got to see a team playing as well as they can and seeing improvements. almost playing better, you know, in spite of the conditions they are. You know, it's funny when Leslie mentioned everyone catching up to the level of professionalism of England, and you have some people like Jess Hayden who still refer to England women as being professional with a small p, because they have things like they, because of the way they've moved around the country, they can't guarantee that the hotel will have the catering that they need, or, you know, they'll have the correct gym facilities or whatever. And it's worrying. You're thinking, hang on, that's how much further the Red Roses are. How far behind are we actually with all our teams?
Okay. Well, feels like we ended on a bit of a downer there, but we are.
Sorry, do you want me to pick? I can give us a positive if you want.
Yeah, go on.
The Red Roses provide the only England team that I think anyone who is of Celtic heritage can tolerate.
Very true. They are the only likeable England team on the planet. To the point where you always dislike them for being likeable. You're like, could you be a bit unpleasant like all the rest of the England teams, please? So at least I can have the pleasure of disliking you, but unfortunately you can't. There was some other women's rugby that happened at the weekend that I shall now talk through. There was Super Rugby W. Waratahs hammered the Drua 62-21. The Wilds the Force beat the Reds. Now, I thought I was looking at the table wrong and there was no New Zealand teams in it, but it turns out there's a whole different league for the New Zealand teams. I don't know whether it's affiliated to the other one or not, like its conferences. So if someone could write in and tell us.
I think I can speak in, because I think David Lawrence, our friend of the pod, and a viewer of me, I think because obviously New Zealand has Super Rugby Aupiki. I think that's like four. I might have gone up to five teams now. As far as I'm aware, that's a separate entity. I don't know if there's plans to merge it.
Oh, cool.
It's a very short competition. I think they play each other twice, have a final. It's almost a bit like...
I was looking at the fixtures. I don't think they even play each other twice. Unless the fixtures aren't complete.
It was a bit weird. Do you know, remember like when Super Rugby unlocked? And you had all the New Zealand, all the Australian teams play against each other, and that was it.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird fudges.
I hope it does. I hope it does emerge. But so in Super Rugby Aupiki, it's four rounds in. So apologise to everybody that I didn't realise that this was happening. So I now know that it's happening. Chiefs are currently top with zero losses. They're ahead of the Blues in seconds. So looking forward to keeping track of this one. And there was also another international game. There was a friendly between Spain and South Africa. What's the South African ladies team called? It's not the Springboks. It's the something else.
I don't have a name, I don't think.
I think it's just SA Women at the moment. Hmm. Unless someone's come up with something really corny like Lady Box, which just sounds really awful. So I know the Sevens are the Blitz Box, and then you've got the Baby Box for the under-20 side.
There's somebody I follow on Twitter who's South African who was tweeting this week about getting a name for the ladies' rugby team. Because it was just women's box or women's team.
The Gazelles or something like that? Although I feel that might be another African nation's name.
Yeah, there must be the roe box? Because a roe is a female deer? A deer a female deer?
No, a doe's a deer, a female deer. Do you not remember the song?
Oh, sorry. I thought I was quoting it right.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't know. Anyway, moving on. So, South Africa beat Spain is the upshot of that. Right, URC. Okay, we'll start with Cardiff versus Glasgow, or Glasgow versus Cardiff, on Friday night. So the question I want answering is this. If you look at the URC table, you would say there was a top three, Leinster, Bulls, Glasgow. That's what the points tell you. But there was a prevailing opinion amongst fans, amongst maybe some pundits, that Glasgow are a bit wobbly. That it feels like the wheels are going to come off any moment. Leslie, is that accurate, true? Are Glasgow true top three URC team?
Oh, Have they shown signs of being properly, particularly this season? I don't think so.
I mean, they barely beat Cardiff, so they can't be that great.
Fair. Fair point. I think if you look who played, given that not all of Scotland's internationals were back, I don't think that was necessarily a bad result. But given they are a Scottish team, the opportunity to really Scotland it up is always there. to have a crisis. I don't think so. I hope not. I think they've got like Zebra to play twice and some.
I mean, obviously they're going to lose to the Scarlets this weekend, can't we? But
no, not happening. Sorry, Hugh.
No, you said that about Benetton a few weeks ago. Come on.
Yeah.
I don't know what voodoo shit you pulled.
No, I don't know if Franco will allow them to have a meltdown. He doesn't seem the type to suffer fools gladly. And he's got this team going pretty well, I think.
They said that in the half time. They were interviewing one of the Glasgow players and they were like, what's Franco like? Is he calm? And the Glasgow player went, he can be calm. And the interviewer went, what, is he angry a lot? And he went, oh yeah, it's angry a lot. Okay. Harley, obviously being the Cardiff fan, you're going to talk about it in depth on Cardiff Central, and you've already spoken about it on Rap. One player that I want to ask you about was scored a lovely try. Is Ben Thomas.
Hmm.
The more I think about it, the more I feel like this guy needs to be in the Wales team. I think he's the perfect 23 jersey wearer for Wales, because he can cover 10, 12 and fullback. How is he coming along? How is he progressing?
So he sort of broke onto the scene, you know, and it was a very hard midfield to break into at Cardiff. Because, you know, for ages we've had Halaholo and Lilo, the bad boys, the absolute dream team, every Cardiff fan's favourites. And, you know, then Max Llewellyn sort of breaking through as a 12. And with Ben Thomas also being a 12, it sort of went and they wanted that little bit more bosh and centre, although Max does have a fantastic set of hands. You know, this season he really started to make that 12 jersey his own. I mean, one of the biggest complaints about him was he didn't seem to be physical enough for the 12 jersey. Which I think is the area of his game that he's brought on most this season. You know, his game awareness is quite good. Having played games at 10 and at fullback as well, that helps. His kicking game's very good. Wonderful passer. I'd argue he maybe not necessarily the 23. I think he's got a shot for the 12 jersey itself.
Hmm.
I think
that would be interesting. Gatland seems to want a passing 12, doesn't he?
I mean, when you look at, like, you know, how his persistence with Nick Tompkins, you know, how much he really wanted Joe Hawkins to be his 12 last year, it's, you know, he clearly wants that distributing playmaker 12, but I feel like what we need, but at the same time, no major international team has a simple, you know, just basically a 10 at 12. You know, they do have someone who can carry the ball, but, you know, you've got Sione Tuipulotu. I mean, Scotland looked a lot worse at the tail end of the Six Nations when Tuipulotu was injured. As brilliant a player, brilliant players as Stafford McDowell and Cam Redpath are, you know, Cam Redpath doesn't really have the carrying game, so he can't really take the pressure off Finn. And Stafford McDowell, I have seen him kick and pass. I know he has played bits of 10, but I would say it's not on the same level as Tuipulotu. And, you know, then it's, you know, it's sort of almost like, well, he's most likely going to carry, so the idea of having this triple threat 12 is it makes you sit up as a defender because you don't know what's coming your way. It's so, yeah, you know, Ben Thomas looks like he could be our answer to that question. So, yeah, I don't know what he's in. I don't know if it's just because Gatland wants him to be a 10 and the way Jockey's been giving Tinas to be all the minutes, that's not happening.
But Tinas to be has been a hell of a signing for you. Where would you be without him? My goodness, you can't believe the WRU tried to block that.
I stand by, I reckon he's the signing of Welsh rugby for this season. Yeah, I think he's, in the way he's made Cardiff a lot less flaky, even though some of his goal kicking has been, our kicking game has been outstanding this season, and it's kept us in games. You know, we're on eight losing bonus points in the league. It's, you know, that's kept us in. You know, it's only really
that suggests that, even then that suggests that something's going to click at some point, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it suggests that something's coming.
Sometimes we can get over that hoodoo against the Scarlets, it'd be great.
We robbed you in those games. Anyway, moving on then. So, Leslie, going to Edinburgh, got our Tonkin out in Cape Town against the Stormers. No shame in that. We put out a video at the weekend saying, are the Stormers really title contenders? And, sorry, Stormers. Edinburgh, where are they going? Are they going to be... It just feels like they're very middle as a team.
Yeah, they're very mid, aren't they? I don't know what is going on there. I watched them. I didn't actually see this game because it was on at the same time as Scotland women's game, so I chose that rightly, I think. I watched back some of the highlights, and I just don't know what Edinburgh are trying to do. You're watching them playing, you're like, I don't know what the game plan is here. I can't even say, oh yeah, this is what they're trying to do, and they're just not executing it well. It's like I don't know what they're doing. I don't know if they know what they're doing, but it's just not working, whatever it is. They look sluggish, look slow, blunt with a butter knife. Just I don't know if it's the players that are the problem, if it's the coaching team, it's a mix of both, but yeah, it's not great there at the moment. If they're mid-table, I think they'll be very lucky this season, because I just don't... I'm not seeing enough green shoots to be at least quietly confident that they could pick off a few folk. It just looks really poor to me at the moment, unfortunately.
They're very... We beat the teams that are worse than us and lose to the teams that are better than us. Yeah. They're very just like...
And they shouldn't be. They have pretty decent front row. The backs are ridiculous, but we've struggled to get the backs involved at all. Like, I know Doohan didn't play this week, but he's played previous weeks, and he may as well not be in there because he's just not getting involved in the game. Like, you have one of, at least in the one of the best wingers in the URC, at least, and we can't do anything with them. It's mad. Mm. Yeah, mm. Not good vibes at Edinburgh at all, just now.
Do you think it's had something to do with like the coaching issues they've had over the last couple of seasons? Because obviously Mike Blair came in, he had a fantastic debut season, and then as his attack got a bit found out, he realised that actually what he wants to be is an attack coach, which actually I have huge respect for. Mm-hmm. Have huge respect for someone saying, no, that's not what I want to do. I want to be this. I feel like, I think Stephen Scott, and I feel Steve Tandy is another one who found head coaching wasn't for him and is making his name as a world-renowned defence coach. And now Sean Everett's come in, who, before getting the Edinburgh Grig, was famous for being nailed by Cardiff. Yes, that Cardiff. And yes, I'm going to mention that 35-0 game against the Sharks, because I'm a Cardiff fan on a podcast and I have to mention it at least once. It's part of what I'm not allowed to wear Cardiff stash if I don't mention it. It's a legal requirement now. But yeah, it does seem like, and I feel like they're struggling for identity.
Yep. At least with Mike, you knew what he was trying to do. The execution wasn't always there, but he was obviously very attack-minded. And when they got going, they were great. But I haven't seen enough from Sean Everett yet to go, yeah, this guy is really great, because he isn't producing anything, really. Yeah, it's just poor. It's a lot of meh at the moment.
Elsewhere in the URC, Munster have snuck back into fifth place. Are they going to do it again? Fourth. They're back in fourth. Audio listeners, how they just held his fingers up. That kind of came out of nowhere. A scrappy win over the Ospreys that they kind of like scored a couple of tries by accident, particularly the one that bounced along the touchline, but didn't go out. That was quite funny. But yeah, Harley, do you think Munster are title contenders? Are they going to do it? How good does RG Snowman look, by the way? Absolutely.
This is peak. So everyone's, a lot of people's joking about, like, Leinster, they're paying, like, half a million euros for a player who's only going to play, like, 4 or 5 games. And yeah, but the 4 or 5 games he's going to play are going to be your quarterfinals, semi-finals, finals, the games you want Archie Smiling in. That is peak. I mean, Munster are a team that, I think Squidge said, Munster are a team that have this season based purely on narrative. There's no tactics. The tactics are all smokescreen. It's all about the narrative. But I mean, it does show just how congested that sort of, I'd say probably about third, fourth to like 11th is in the URC, which I think is fantastic for the league. It's annoying some of us, particularly all the Welsh sides were all struggling, with the exception of the Ospreys.
Weirdly, lose games when
they try and play expansive rugby. They need to stop with that bollocks and kick the fucking ball. It's what gets them wins.
Yeah, the URC posted some highlights and were just like, beautiful attacking rugby, hashtag Munster. And I was like, are you sure?
I think Munster actually do have a really good attacking game. I think
the whole Munster play boring rugby thing.
Yeah. I think Munster could do it. But I mean, it's one of those things. They had their annual early half of the season. Oh, everyone's injured. Now everyone's fit. And it's like, surprise. Yeah. You're just saving all the good players for when it counted.
That is the thing about a playoff league, is that the first half of the season doesn't really matter. It's not, you only need to win your last 7 games and you're probably going to win the title. I also just mentioned, obviously, talked about it earlier, Scarlets won. It's a bit like when Wales beat Fiji. And I'm like, yay, but also, because I want Benetton to do well. So I'm happy, but I feel bad. Like, I wouldn't, if we'd have lost, I'd have been like, at least Benetton won. But,
I mean, they beat Cardiff, so that, at least you've got that excitement, enjoyment.
So got that. I hope they don't. If they finish like 11th now, it's going to be so disappointing after the start of the season they had. Other results: Lions beat 10-man Connacht. Maybe that's why Ender's really not here tonight. It's not 10-man, 14-man. Wrong sport. The Lions were down to 14-man and they beat Connacht in Connacht, and it was in Slabakanya who got sent off as well
after 10 minutes. Just want to pick on that, because I was listening to Master of None Pod on my way to and from work, and they made a point, actually, saying I find quite pertinent to quite a few teams, of how people seem to get playing against 14 men so wrong.
Yeah,
because Connacht did it when Cardiff went down a man, and really struggled to beat us. And it sounds like they had a similar time against the Lions, who had an attack like kick. Looks a lot better, but this always seems to be the conception that, there's 14 people, let's throw the ball around because it's going to be space away. Wales are nightmares against it all the times we've been up a man against England, especially. When actually the space usually is hidden somewhere in the middle, because they're like, they're going to throw the ball wide, so we'll make the gap. Was it me, you have long speculated, actually the easiest player to lose in this sort of situation is a flanker, because it's the player you can hide the most, because the way they defend is usually a lot more of a room and roll. It's quite a... Yeah, it's just... Come on, Connacht. I really want you to do well. You're my Irish team. If I had to pick anyone in green, it might as well be the green one.
Yeah. And then finally, the last... I should say Leinster beat Zebra. A good crowd in Zebra, 3,500, which isn't very much in compared to other teams, but Zebra regularly get less than 2,000. So 3,500 is essentially...
On a par with Ospreys.
Oh, come on, Harley. We weren't going to go there. And then the last game that we all watched was Bulls against Dragons. I think Bulls were playing in their slippers this game. I thought they were like, we've got a big game against Leinster and we've got to stop off in Newport on the way there. And then the Dragons made a good fight of it. I thought the Dragons' scrum held up quite well. I thought their maul defence was excellent. But Leslie, you were tweeting during the game like, hang on a minute, the Dragons are drawing with the Bulls. That can't be right.
Yeah, I didn't see the beginning, so I tuned in later on and I was like, hang on. I was expecting Dragons to be ground into fine paste, but it wasn't happening. Yeah, I didn't think Bills kind of fell asleep, didn't they? They were just, couldn't be bothered by the looks of it. Just, flooded their way through the game.
Yeah, and Harvey, Billy LaRue had a couple of fuck it, I'll do it myself moments, and that got them over the line.
He did go a bit full Vidim, yes. I do think Dragons were very unlucky. I do think they, as much as I don't want to go into ref chat in detail, but it did seem to pervade the bias. I mean, it's probably confirmation bias on my part, one thing that teams get ref differently based on their reputation, because things that were looked at that you reckon, that, you know, if it'd been reversed, might have been looked at. And, you know, like Kai Evans 50-22 versus, that wasn't, versus Willie Rose first one that was. And, I mean, at least on TV, I mean, obviously linesmen and TMOs will have the cameras. Maybe it's just because we don't hear that communication, and that's where I think it becomes a bit more frustrating. So I do think the comms between the rest of the TMO and the audience, whether it's in the stadium or on TV, need to be a bit better. But, you know, they looked like they were identical kicks. And one was said, oh, well, of course that's 50-22 because it's Willie LaRue, or, ah, oh, well, it's only Kai Evans, and it probably wasn't.
The one of those that always sticks with me and will stick with me forever was in the Pro 14 final over in Dublin. James Davis got done for a very, very soft late hit, for audio listeners, I'm doing quotation marks, on Johnny Sexton. Johnny Sexton, obviously being a Leinster player, goes down like he's been shot, late submission for the Oscars. And the referee blows it up. Yeah, penalty to Leinster. And Johnny Sexton kicks the ball down to the 22 and Leinster maul it over. And this was right on half-time and we never recovered from that. And it's just that feeling of, like, that would never have been given the other way around. That would never have been Scarlett's given that decision against Leinster. And you know what? When you talk about, like, that status is earned. By being good, you get favourable decisions. So it is still a meritocracy, but it's just... Anyway... Moving on to some other rugby around the world then in our rugby roundup. So, Super Rugby, Fiji and Drua got a dramatic win at home over the Waratahs. Golden points, drop goal, exciting times. I still don't like golden point, but I hold a double standard. And if the Fiji and Drua did it, I like it. Them as the rules. Crusaders still winless, 5-0. A really bad poor game from the Blues. Blues should have put about 50 on them. And Force beat the Reds. 40 points to 31 in all of the reasons why I don't like Australian rugby. Japan Rugby League One is on Rugby TV. It's on, sorry, Rugby Pass TV now. So if you want to get up early in the morning, you can watch two Japanese league games a week. They put the Wild Knights on first, which is a good call. Wild Knights are a really, really good team. I think they would easily hold their own in most leagues around the world. And they hammered Kubota Spears 55-22 away from home. And then finally, in Super Rugby Americas, Raptors overcame... Oh, I haven't updated the notes. The Raptors actually beat someone else. Not Hikari, someone else. But bad news for the Raptors. They are employing one Rufus McCain to play in their team, McLean, at the moment. And speaking to David of Scrum of the Earth, shout out David, he is worried that McLean is going to be turning out for the USA before too long, which isn't a great look for them. If you don't know what his backstory is, Google it. Right, moving into the top 14, and it was mentioned earlier, the incredible UBB versus Toulouse game. So this is why we talk about rugby around the world. So people know that these games are huge, and it's so delivered. It was such an amazing attacking game. It was drama right to the end. Damien Penno was on fire. Right early on, Thomas Ramos, who was playing 10 for Toulouse, got injured, and you're like, oh no. And then who comes off the bench to replace him? Antoine bloody Dupont. And he Duponted hard during this game. He nearly got stepped by a hooker at one point, but he recovered it marvellously. And then he put in this incredible try assist where he burned off half the team and then did a no-look reverse pass and put some of it. But UBB got over the winning line in the end in tense fashion. Leslie, did you manage to catch the highlights of this one?
I did. What I did notice was there was like 90,000 views already on it when I watched it earlier on today. It's only like 12 minutes or something, but it just looked like it was chaos from what I saw. The defensive lines were just an optional extra. just classic French rugby, just vibes, you know, it was great.
Yeah, well, there was a very typical Damien Penno bullshit moment where he went for an intercept and the guy realised he was going to intercept it, so deliberately hit it forward. And then there was debate of like, well, is that a penalty try? Because if he had have intercepted it, he probably would have scored. And there was all the people like, the team in possession have deliberately knocked it on and we have to award a penalty try. And there's a lot of mental gymnastics. And eventually, I think they just went, let's just award a penalty and just move on with our lives.
I think it was a penalty yellow card, because I managed to catch, well, I caught some highlights. I caught the first half highlights because I found a 5 minute highlight package and thinking, hang on, there's been a lot of restarts and stuff. Hang on, we're 3 minutes in and we're only on 10 minutes. Oh dear! But I caught that. Yeah, it was a very weird situation. I might have to have a look to see if Fireplay have kept the recording of the full game, although I've been
trying to. They might. It's definitely.
They're very quick to get rid of it after.
They are sometimes, but it was a very very good watch. And like I said, UBB got over the line at the end. La Rochelle lost again. They got beat by Bayonne. Scarlet's legend, Uzair Kassim, scoring for Bayonne again. Harley making love has that. Stade Francais still top, weirdly. English Prem, you guys both watched the Bath game, right?
Yeah.
I saw bits of it in between.
Not most of it.
What did you make of it? They beat Saints, didn't they? Was it Saints they beat?
Sale.
No, it was Sale, yeah. It was as Bath versus Sale as you'd expect it to be, but in the wrong way round. Bath were very physical and Sale tried to do lots of tarty stuff. It was quite a weird game, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I really like the Bath 10, 12, 13. It's a particularly nice combo. I thought Oi Lawrence had a very good game.
Yeah, not one of my favourite players, but we'll move on.
You trying to get ahead of me there, I think. I was about to say, Finn Russell showing that anything a boring English team can do, he can do better with the shonkiest drop goal I've ever seen. It was wonderful.
So I kind of tweeted, you know how we only see clips from the Japanese league when a South African second row does something crazy in it, or Sezen Colby does something in it? That's what the English Prem is now. It's just whenever Finn Russell does something, that's the only clips and highlights that we ever see. Or Jasper Visa for Leicester.
I do have a TAF watch, if you permit me. So obviously, although I'm a Bristol fan, the one Friday of the two Friday night games I saw was Gloucester's win over Leicester, and Matt Sluen got a rare actual proper game of rugby for Gloucester, and he was very very good.
Sarries thumped Quins at the Tottenham Stadium, but the real question is, who the heck are these 61,000 Sarries fans who came out on that? That's very suspicious. Paid actors. It's a bit like Australia, it doesn't really exist. That's a flat earth joke, which I don't believe in. I assume that was 40,000 hospitality corporate boxers. That's all I can imagine what it was. Harley, are you pleased with how Bristol are going this season?
I wouldn't say pleased. I'm very pleased with the result against Saints, you know, beating top of the table, you know, quite unanimously, 7 tries with 7 different scores, which is always a sign that your attack's at least doing different things. Because usually, you know, if you've got one person who's like way above on try score, it's you're saying that you're doing one thing. Not always, obviously, but yeah, I do think ever since Pat Lam had that 7-year contract, Bristol have been very, very hit and miss. It's been very hard to like get any sort of consistency. It does. So there are times when you feel like Lam's parked the bus a bit, and now he's getting towards the end of his contract. He's started coaching again, trying to get his portfolio up.
Yeah, he's like, I'll start trying again in 5 years.
Yeah, I think.
Oh, Matt, come in. That'll help.
Yeah,
he's the one a great thing, try as well against Stormers.
Yeah, the one thing Bristol need is a more big, expensive marquee players. And, you know, less solid people. I think having AJ McGinty back and solidly back, and, you know, he seems to have got over his bunch of niggles, is really helping Bristol. As I said, part of my trepidations about Callum Sheedy coming back to Cardiff, when I'm like, he hasn't exactly been playing for Bristol, has he? So it's not like he's in any form at all.
I can't understand the people who are saying like he should be starting for Wales. I'm like, have you just been reading Wales Online articles and that's how you basically form your entire opinion?
I mean, the amount of people I've seen who's telling me that Teddy Williams should be a six after having a fantastic performance in the second row is quite baffling.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, English Championship, Ealing won again, obviously. Jonah Holmes scored for them. Coventry won as well, which is fun, one of our favourite teams. Emma Lahr, Harley, you're a Jackals fan?
Yes. I wish you'd pick me of any of the three last week when we won, or 2 weeks before when we won. Unfortunately, Jackals went down 22-35 to Nola Gold in a weird game where we were actually 2 points better than last time last season, which is a mad game where we somehow scored the same number of tries as Nola, but missed every single kick. Free Jacks, let's check my notes here, Free Jacks beat Chicago Hounds in Chicago, 22-17. The newly created team Anthem beat Utah Warriors 36-32. Seattle beat. That was Anthem's first wins. Speaking of first wins, I think it was Anthem, or it might be the Atlanta ones. This is where I realised I've got the logos and forgotten what all the logos are. But speaking of first wins, so a team which has a player from both of our URC teams, Hugh, Miami Sharks, they got their first win.
Yay.
Yeah, Miami Sharks, they beat, this one might be Anthem and the other one might be Atlanta. I really should have double checked this. But yeah, so Miami Sharks definitely won 50-21 to the team. Old Glory went down 11-27 to San Diego Legion. And Houston Sabercats carry on their unbeaten run, so they top the Western Conference with the New England Free Jacks topping the East Conference.
Sabercats against Seawolves, 42-40.
That's that was a very, very high scoring game. Thankfully, the Rugby Network do keep most of their replays on. Apart from, weirdly, I can't get the first game of the season for the Dallas Jackals. It's really weird. I've had some very weird problems with the Rugby Network this season so far.
And then in the Welsh Prem, Newport have drawn level with Llandovery after beating Ever Vale. A big game this Thursday between Llandovery and Newport, Thursday night on telly. Definitely watch it. It's going to be. I'm not being patronised until the Welsh Prem. I promise. That's going to be a really good game. Definitely watch it. Cardiff beat Swansea 38-34. We covered this on the Friday Breakfast Show, Harry. But you've been following Cardiff in the Prem this season.
I've been trying to watch the games where they could. Unfortunately, we had to record Cardiff Central on the Thursday night that game because I was going to go to that game. That sounded like a game where we seemed to be. It started off bad. I'm not going to lie, they had us in the first half. Just trying to see how many memes I can get in one game. But yeah, we managed to pull it back and then, you know, went ahead and came through. But yeah, it's a big thing for us securing a top four finish, which, given the troubles we've had, probably because one of the knock-on effects with the budget cuts in the UOP for the main side is the rags get less academy and sort of like the fringe squad players. So that's, you know, and that's helped the backbone for what's caused Cardiff to be so successful the last few seasons. You know, and I hope we do get top four playoff and have a decent run. With the announcement head coach Steve Law's going to leave at the end of the season, who's been, you know, fantastic for the Rags this season for many, many years now.
Cool. And then lastly, to finish up, no TV guide with Ender being absent, but stay tuned to our socials to pick it up at the end of the week. Tune into the Friday Breakfast Show as well to hopefully hear it there. If you need a 15-minute pod to just pick up your Friday, that's definitely the one for you to listen to. You can catch it on audio only. And then just lastly, I just want to ask you two for a game that you're most looking forward to this weekend. Leslie, you first.
Scotland women against France, and that's because I'm going.
Ah, oh, where's it being held?
Hive.
Oh.
Well, that's gonna sound huge in there then.
Yeah, it'll be good. Looking forward to that.
I can't decide whether that's the bigger game or Ireland Italy is a bigger game. I feel like the Scotland one's a bigger game.
Ireland Italy could be closer, I think. I think Ireland have a reasonable chance of a sneaky little win over the Italians.
Cool. Ali, what's your big game?
Weirdly, I'm going to go, because we mentioned two of them, I'm going to go for the third one, because it's going to be Wales versus England Ashengate, because it's always huge. Even if it, the results are foregone conclusion, the margin's still very up for grabs. And it's, in the point I was going to add with the Ireland Italy game, I think that's going to be a huge barometer for where Ireland are with this sort of like mid pack. Whereas I feel like France is probably right on the outer reaches. I think this is where Wales is, you know, Wales have talked about using, you know, the reason they were happy to be in WXC1, even though they lost all their games, was because it gave them a platform to work out how far away they are from the top teams. And you can't necessarily work out how far that gap is until you've played them. So, you know, I think that's why I think I always look forward to Wales England, because it does give me a good yardstick of where the team are. What do we actually need to work on, or is it just the thing? As cool, nice as wins are, I'm so used to not winning that.
Yeah. If you two hadn't picked those, I would have picked one of those as well. I think my other game to watch out for is definitely Leinster Bulls on Friday night. Huge top of the table clash in the URC. Bulls have brought all their Springboks, and now there's murmurs that the Leinster might actually field their Ireland internationals as well. So I'm just so looking forward to that. That's going to be a potentially test match intensity club game. I'm really looking forward to it. Anyway, that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you so much to everyone for listening. Remember to check out the Friday Breakfast Show. Like, comment, subscribe if you're on YouTube. Thank you to my wonderful guests for helping me out this evening. And we'll see you again on Friday morning. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.